Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Michael Sidgwick, joined today by Andy Murray to discuss everything that happened on last night's show. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. We review and preview Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0, Dynamite, Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have wrestler interviews, we host roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. Look, I'm going to apologise in advance. I had a big, intense travel day yesterday. I'm catching up on minimal sleep. I've been on the drink. I've been on a two-week holiday to Crete. So this is probably not going to run all too smoothly. Adam Wilborn is much better at this hosting gig than I am.
Listen.
But he's off this week, so I'll do my best. You might not get move-for-move recaps. I might get lost at various points. But, you know, I've got takes, and that's possibly the most important thing. On the subject of takes, what's your overall take on this second Triple H Raw?
I mean, it was largely the same as last week for me, in that I didn't think it was really the statement show, and that was the exact word that was kind of given to the reporters before last week's show, that it was necessarily billed as, but I thought it was a good enough, enjoyable enough pro wrestling show, which is certainly very welcome after 40 years of Vince McMahon tropes, some of which yet remain on the show, but perhaps one that also brought a number of challenges that haven't really been discussed en masse by the wrestling commentariat to the forefront, which we will go through as we progress through this show, but certainly, I mean, these Triple H shows, you know, not masterworks by any stretch, but a lot better than what they were before, at least.
They're a lot better. I've got a kind of a philosophical issue with my coverage of this new WWE, which is very surreal for me to say out loud because I've been off on holiday since like the bombshell dropped and all these changes have happened, where I still don't feel that it's just weird being patronizing about a wrestling promotion with the resources that WWE has to say, aren't they good for treating a title with dignity and not just as this ridiculous afterthought that exists to drive content? I find it patronizing. I always have to talk about the curve. It's just I'm compelled to do it. And it's just this weird sort of, I'm fractured. Do I praise the bare minimum? Or do I actually have a note of optimism in my voice for the first time in years and years and years? I will oscillate wildly between those two things as we go on. And, I might as well just start at the very start. Bailey, Io Sky?
That's right. All caps as well, baby.
Like, the very first show was SummerSlam, was it not? Or was it the SmackDown?
It was SummerSlam, yeah.
And, like, get a name change. Like, straight away, it's like there always are going to be just specific WWE habits.
It's very important that you remove one syllable from her surname, friends.
Yes. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So we get Bayley, Io Sky. It's going to take a while to get used to that one. And Dakota Kai start the show with a promo. They basically say things to the effect of this division needs saving. What's missing from this division is hunger. We are here to revamp an ailing division, and who cared about Becky Lynch and her stupid costumes? And there's a few more subtle digs at the latter day Vince McMahon creative direction until they are interrupted by Alexa Bliss, Bianca Belair, and Asuka. This promo exchange, not not a train, but an exchange, sets up genuinely what could be a really good match, our clash at the castle, mm-hmm. which I'm really looking forward to seeing, particularly for the exchanges between Asuka and Sky. That should be absolutely tremendous. But basically, Bianca Belair, like, cuts the crap and says something to the effect of, we don't want to talk anymore. We just want to fight.
You want to take control. I want to lose
it. I want to lose it.
Really good.
I bet you the writer had a right little bloody, you know,
excited thing.
Yes, he was very excited about that one. And then it instigates a brawl, and it's unwatchable, in my opinion, because the camera cuts are absolutely incessant. I think genuinely what I saw from this brawl was an elusive pro wrestling energy where they were really committed to doing it.
Yeah.
And there's quite a bit of brawling on the show. You don't really get it from the Fed. So it was nice to see, even though you could barely see it, because Kevin Dunn remains the captain of this ship. I'm going to try not to talk about all of my takes on all of Triple H's WWE, because it could take forever, and, you know, we don't want to go too long on the Raw review. But for me, right, this is a nice idea, better than it's a really engaging and effective story, in that Dakota Kai is just so much better as a babyface. Mm-hmm. Bayley is so much better as a babyface. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a case, for me anyway, of people deserving the spots and me being happy for them being in the spots, rather than being this great storyline with great casting in and of itself. Nonetheless, it's great to see Io get the main roster treatment and get treated with an actual reverence and serious as a threat. The brawl, again, what I saw of it was pretty good, and I'm looking forward to the six woman.
Yeah, definitely good and bad to this, I think. You know, these kind of opening segments are beyond played out in WWE. We don't need to dive into that. It's kind of a case of the more things change, Triple H, the more they stay the same here. And then you go to the Kevin Dunn style of production there as well, and it's kind of like another thing. But it is nice to see actually the almost the full breadth of the women's division highlighted in this spot, rather than it just being man comes down and does a man story. It's good to see that at least over 2 weeks of Raw, and SmackDown as well with the Gauntlet match, it's nice to see that the hope that the division is going to have more of an emphasis under Triple H is actually being realized, which is good. And, like, yeah, the storyline is the feud that we have here is so Triple H. It's so, like, black and gold NXT, and that it's, hey, it's just a bunch of people you like, and they're all going to come out and they're going to stare each other down and brawl. But it brings a different energy to Raw, like you say. I like the brawl. I like the fact that we didn't have to linger on, like, the awkward period where they all get split up, like it cut to the commercial and then they'd been dispersed. I think that the Bailey helmed groups, in, for lack of better name, their core narrative is solid enough. It's like, well, no one recognized how really great Kai and Sky were. Io had been in developmental for years and years and years. Kai got cut outright. It's good stuff. I think, however, Bailey was a little off her game here. She seems quite rusty. Not commanding or showing the kind of confidence typical of the role model character. She got lost a couple, which is not a big deal, but when you're trying to deliver this message in front of the audience for the first time, it's quite important that everything is held together.
It's quite important that they're in control.
Hey,
and when they're not,
go.
It's quite ironic. I will put over Dakota Kai, who recovered from the fumble brilliantly, yeah. I thought.
Yeah, it's good. Like, I really like this group. I'm already kind of, like, you know, name changes are what they are. I'm already kind of used to this one, to be honest. It's better than Gunther, with the illusions that that came with, right? And I'm used to Gunther now as well, so here we are. It's a really cool pairing, and, like, it actually makes sense as well when you listen to their narrative. I saw a few people, yeah, why am I going into this kind of nonsense? But a few people going, oh, they've just thrown two people together. Well, then you have the narrative threads there to make it make sense. And it does make sense. And you're right, the trios match, all of these people are extremely talented. And that trios match will, to borrow a common term, bang. It's going to be awesome.
It will bang. I don't think the next match did, but it advanced the storyline nonetheless. Look at me, that is the bloody patronize.
You're like me reviewing SmackDown in 2016, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but it pushed the story forward and it accomplished its goals.
The Mega fans will have to forgive me, because I reiterate this take constantly. Do you think, like, fans of any other medium, right? like EastEnders or like whatever, or Game of Thrones or whatever it might be. We'll go, yeah. Bit rubbish this, but storyline happened.
Yeah.
They're meant to. It's a fictional television show, but regardless, this was Seth Rollins defeating Angelo Dawkins in about 9 minutes of a pretty standard fair Raw television match. And the story around which involved Montez Ford trying to live rent-free in the head of Seth Rollins by mocking his selling and just basically trying to throw him off his game, which led to a great pounce spot over the announce table. Seth Rollins is so great at being blindsided. It's like really quite hard because when you are like anticipating that, you shouldn't be as... He just basically loses himself in the moment. I thought it was the highlight of the match, which was won by Rollins once Montez Ford was banished to the back after a spirited enough effort. There was a nice... near fall, but Rollins won with the pedigree, and that basically functions to advance this like slow split between the Street Profits.
Yeah, kind of Ford's exuberance getting the better of him when it worked to his benefit early on with the pounce spot when he was the distracting factor there. Later, he gets in the ring with a chair and he just gets too carried away, gets thrown out, and that contributes ultimately to Ford. Ford getting thrown out contributes to Dawkins losing the advantage of having him there. I echo. I think like Seth's, and this is a regurgitated take again, it doesn't take much to go, Seth Rollins is good, but his floor is really high. So this year in particular, when he's wrestling, you're going to get a good match at the bare minimum. And I do like what they did with this in terms of like constantly dodging the stomp shows that Dawkins isn't just some dumb guy. He's learned from the Ford match the previous week and Seth, but he's one step ahead because he should be one step ahead. This is a tag team wrestler he's facing, so it's like, okay, the stomp hasn't worked. Oh, pedigree, eat that. There's not really a whole lot to pick apart here, is there? It's not the kind of thing that warrants this thorough in-depth breakdown. It was just a good, solid TV match with satisfying enough action that you will take every single week on Raw, given the way that through the last years of Vince McMahon's creative life, given how tedious some parts of the show become, I'll take this every day.
Yeah, I'll take this every day as well. And one little note before we move on, I was a little bit terrified by what I thought would be Triple H's cheat code, given that his very first SmackDown started with a half an hour long TV match. I'm thinking his approach was, right, okay, I'm going to, and he did this so often during his twilight years in NXT, of I'm going to add an extra 6 minutes minimum to a TV match, thereby making every sort of critic or fan begrudgingly accept it as worthy or good in terms of other... Well, they worked really hard to put the graft in, so I can't really criticise it ethically. Right, okay, that's my cheat code to getting away from an absolute critical slaughtering this week. But this week didn't really do that. This didn't need to go any longer than 9 to showcase Dawkins as someone, as he said, who was in some scrub, but didn't need to go 15 minutes because I hate conflating TV and pay-per-view. I just don't like it at all.
Yeah.
We head backstage where we run into, and again, it's invisible camera stuff. WWE is always going to be a little bit like WWE, whether you like it or not, and regardless of who or not's in charge. But Edge sauntered up to the Mysterios, said, you know, I've got your back tonight, you know, the Judgment Day are about. And then Edge fronted up to Dominic. the idea of these two being equal or having a conversation like between adults is just so weird to me. But anyway, regardless, he said, like, look, it was a mistake. Didn't mean to spear you. It was an accident. It's wrestling. These things happen, buddy. Are we cool? And Dominic was like, yeah, man, we're cool. And shoves him. I was like, well, are you? Because it didn't really seem like you're cool. Whatever. Basically, Ray was like, no, this guy's family, this family. I've got a long connection. I've known him for 20 years. And Dominic says, well, I've known you for 25. And he's like, no, I can't believe you're taking his side. And, you know, just again, it furthers the split between the Mysterios. And,
Yeah, I mean...
Anything involving Dominic Mysterio is pretty bad.
It's quite funny, Edge, Ray going to bat for notoriously trustworthy man, Edge, over his own son. I get it, the shared connections and stuff, but yeah, interesting. I mean, Dominic forced into situations where he has to act is always going to be quite a rigid experience, I think, to be polite. And you know, it's a split that has basically been teased for about a year and a half now. So I would really like to see some serious headway made on this if they're going to do it. If they're not going to do it, if you're not going to do it, just stop this stuff altogether. Later on, Dominic proving that his best role on the show is actually being unconscious. So I'm sorry. That's mean, right? But he doesn't really project anything that's going to make you invest to a degree, does he? Yeah, this comes from Andy Murray, who doesn't like burials.
Honestly, man, I thought I was harsh. That's honestly the most perfect description of his qualities or lack thereof. In another extension of this is, in fact, the Triple H era, Kevin Owens absolutely destroys Ezekiel, and this pretty much was a write-off, was it not?
This was great.
This was great. So he just absolutely kills Ezekiel, who didn't get an entrance. This is basically just a less-than-subtle coded message of, we are not going to do anything further with this Ezekiel character. He is going to be treated like a jobber, then as a corpse, and it's basically Apron Powerbomb, stretcher job. The idea being that Kevin Owens is going to be the guy he was in like late 2015. The psychotic, unhinged heel who doesn't mess about. It's a bit of a shame because he's really got some comedic chops, but you know, he probably does have an actual one last main event run as a serious guy in him. And it appears the table has been set for that to happen.
Yeah, this was great. I mean, I always go back when it comes to Kevin Owens smashing just a loser. I always go back to the Alex Riley feud in NXT.
Oh my God, it was great.
That was sensational pro wrestling television, just taking this pathetic guy and crushing him at every single opportunity and getting really petty with it as well. This ruled hard. When I saw Ezekiel in the ring with his music already playing or whatever, and he's like, "Hey guys, I'm Ezekiel," I was like, "You're getting geeked out, my friend. Here we go, baby." And this was the only guy capable of taking that just one note rubbish Vince McMahon penned material, making it watchable, and just smashing it under his boots, probably like a couple of months after the character had ran its course. It's just ideal. He smashes into him. The apron powerbomb, which was his kill shot in NXT, puts him on the stretcher. If I have one complaint, I would have liked to have seen Kev get even more just needlessly violent. I would have liked to jump off the apron and smash him while he's on the being carried away by the medics, right? While he's being stretchered out. Just get some shots in. Just be, like, even worse. But, yeah, this was good. It was just the one-sided shellacking of a gimmick I think most would agree was only ever watchable because of KO.
Yeah.
And, it's a great character, the prize fighter. Owens is like one of the most valuable guys in WWE in terms of just being able to occupy space on this 3-hour show and make it watchable and make it entertaining, whatever role you put him in, whether it's working all the way at the top of the card with Chris Jericho when he was Universal Champion, or it's doing a mid-card feud with rebranded Elias and the split personality weird thing that's been going on, he's gonna make it worth watching because he's so witty and he's so charming and he's just a great TV guy. So yeah, all in on this, very encouraging. You can probably tell from my tone that I'm not a big fan of Ezekiel, so watching that gimmick getting flattened, hopefully something else is in his future, very satisfying across the board.
Yep. Absolutely. Less than satisfying, the Judgment Day. Actually, you know, I would say this is uneven. I don't want to be too cynical because there's a development here that I really quite liked and it had little to do with the promo itself. So the Judgment Day come out and they're talking about how Balor says it's funny that Edge and Rey thought Judgment Day should fear them because there's no such thing as fear, but danger's real and I am the danger. I can't really do accents, as everybody knows.
I am the danger. That was bad too.
Yeah, we both suck. Yeah, we're terrible. Both the absolute worst.
But absolutely terrible.
The general gist is, I don't know, because it's absolute word soup, scripted WWE nonsense here. And this was a little bit, you know, you can have the praise, you can have a little talk about Papa H, even though it's absolutely nauseating. But there's still writers and there are still instructions in this company. And Damian Priest and Finn Balor alike both did the disastrous pauses between the sort of like nonsense verbiage.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, they were absolutely assaulted with what chance. And it just between the cadence and the way less clever than it thinks it is verbiage, this just got absolutely rejected by the audience. One thing I did like, however, is that Damian Priest challenged Edge in advance for a match in Toronto with the idea being, I want to embarrass you in your sort of home city or home country or wherever the frig Edge is from. There's a rather AEW-like approach to this, where they are actually naming the city, they are attaching a significance to the city and the story, which sort of gets characters over, makes you believe they're not just idiots scripted by idiots, that they do have an interior life, they do have emotional attachments, that they do have motives to really destroy people and their emotional attachments. And again, it is bare minimum stuff, but I do like the idea of, I love the region specific stuff in AEW and how they manage it, and you know, it shouldn't be just theirs to have. And I like how they're going to do this match in that city, and it should be really, really hot as a result, because it's something worth promoting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the to focus on it, I think it was his first match in Toronto in 12 years or something is going to be. So it's good stuff. Yeah, it's good stuff. I think with the Judgment Day, this is probably going to be one of those acts that does take a little while longer to transition from Eros, isn't it? Because it was so... It's one of the most elaborate and regimented things, with the entrance and the spooky verbiage and the way they talk and the riddles they weave, and you know, something that was probably quite carefully, maybe that's not the word, but regimented, crafted by the writers and all of this stuff. So when you're coming from this era of extreme agenting and everything, maybe something like this isn't something you can just rip the band-aid off. Would we prefer it that way? Well, I would. It's not my favorite stable in the world, even though I like the personnel involved. Presentation just doesn't play to my sensibilities.
Normally.
I figured we'd be in agreement there. So maybe it's just something that's going to take a little while. You know, I'm very reticent to use trust the process as an argument when it comes to these free initials of WWE. However, new guy penning the script, I guess. There's been reports of wrestlers in some cases not necessarily been given the same script they would have before. Some people are getting the blueprint, some the bullet points that was always the way of doing things before all of this kicked in. Some talk of some loosening in the ring as well. Drew and Sheamus apparently called that old-fashioned Donnybrook from a few weeks ago in the ring, which is probably why it was so good. Encouraging stuff. It's probably just a good example, I think, of... You know, a lot of people, when these changes were announced, were like, oh, it's going to be a revolution creatively. It's going to change everything immediately. I always thought it was best to err on the side of caution, not necessarily from a place of cynicism, just from a place of...
experience.
Exactly. It's going to be an evolution appropriately rather than a revolution.
Very poetic. Up next, there was some stuff with, like, I think Dom went missing. I love the idea of, because they treat him like he's 12, that you could literally imagine, right, we're going to have to put him on a milk carton. Right, absolutely. And then
he's such a loser, isn't he?
It's so weird watching
poor
him.
Dom.
He's meant to be 25. Daniel Garcia is 25. And that is the difference between these two companies.
Boys in this business.
Yeah, but boys in this business. And the NWA has got some men.
Shouts to
and then we get Finn Balor versus Rey Mysterio, right? You know what I like, Murray? You know what I like? I like
pina coladas.
Margaritas.
Sorry.
Oh, speaking of, if I did like pina coladas, right, do you want to know one of my shelved FPL names?
Hit me.
PNR Colada.
PNR Colada. Tremendous. I was really struggling for FPL names this year, man. It was a tough shift.
I just did a Twin Peaks reference.
Yeah. Firewalk with me. Very good. I almost last year, and this will resonate only with about two or three people who are listening to this, but it will resonate extremely strongly. I was Pfizer Soze last year, which is a double play on words that only people who watch Scottish football will get. This year I was like, I'm not going to do better than that. Like, I love a niche reference, right, that hits only with like five people out of 100. Couldn't concoct anything better, so I went with Free Deirdre Rashid, which will mean even less to listeners of this podcast, but there we go.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, it's Coronation Street, mate. Are you not up on your lore of Weatherby? No. Evidently not. No, all right, moving swiftly onwards, Curly Watts.
You know what I love?
What's that?
Drama, right? I love drama. I love feeling that you've been lulled into something happening, and then the heart rate spiking by something else then happening and just being lost into a story. And I kind of was here with, like, overbooked is like a negative term. But yeah. This was like overbooked in a really good way. And it wasn't just your typical, all right, these guys can go 20 minutes because they're so great in the ring. Like, my cynical expectations of a Triple H produced Balor versus Mysterio match that's brought out the Judgment Day. And Edge had a great brawl, and the fans were really into it. And by the end, Rhea Ripley dragged out the aforementioned unconscious Dominic.
Played his role to perfection.
And you thought you were going to get a distraction finish. In fact, it was subverted, and you got an absolutely cracking near fall before Finn Balor did, in fact, beat Rey Mysterio. But there was one great moment where a deliberately terrible, I think, / hope, Three Amigos suplex, where Finn Balor did the most half-assed, Orange Cassidy-esque Eddie Guerrero shimmy, and then Rey Mysterio, who actually feels like an alive babyface again, was like, no, don't do that, you dickhead, I'm going to do the suplex. So this is some really nice moments of spike and drama, and like babyface resolve, and babyface defiance, and babyface guile, and I've said three positive things about a babyface in a single WWE TV match, so change must be coming. But, you know, Finn Balor in the end got the win, and you know it's the right result. You want to heat this up before it makes the tape, and I thought this was genuinely really good.
Yeah, it was a good example of, like you say, the tropes being employed very effectively for the right outcome. I'm really, like, Rhea Ripley seems to have a vendetta on poor Dom. Like, she popped this guy like a zit last week.
Yeah.
In the corner. And then this week, she's like, I'll beat him up again. Take that. It's good stuff, because they dealt with the Damian Priest interference extremely well. It was inevitable. You knew he was going to get involved. Immediately, he gets wiped out by the Edge runs down, blah, 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 brawls him through the crowds. And then it's like, oh, yeah, you forgot about this one, too. You thought your son was safe? You've already, after he'd gone missing? Oh, no, I killed him. So, yeah, good stuff across the boards. Happy with the outcome, happy with the execution. Just a happy, I'm a happy guy, man, as you can tell from my tone.
What I liked about this, right, and again, just another contrast, because people want to know the contrast. People are always asking, like, what's really the difference, or what do you expect to see the difference between the Vince WWE and the Triple H WWE? What you got here was really exciting, unpredictable, pro wrestling, overbooked, but good for it, with, like, actual physical things happening, where you got brawls into the crowd that the crowd went really, really hot for. You got a typical seeming distraction, and then they subverted it with a great near fall, and the fans really got behind Rey Mysterio as a result. This is really well-crafted, in-ring, pro-wrestling storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. That was the Triple H version of what he's doing with the Judgment Day stable. Vince McMahon's version, with what he did with the Judgment Day stable, literally every single week, they came out with an even worse script than the one that they got given here, and just reiterated the premise of the stable week after week after week. We are the Judgment Day. This is what we're here for. Next week, the exact same thing. Just so many pointless, wasted words. And then you get Triple H involved, and there is actual, genuine in-ring pro wrestling, and it's advanced the story in a much more loud, exciting way. So there's a goddamn contrast for you. We go backstage. Sarah Schreiber interviews Tamina and Dana Brooke, and the idea of her saying she's going to be a two-time champion is just ridiculous. You're not a champion. You've got a comedic belt. But regardless, that's something that I believe years ago, 2019, the USA Network actually pitched, and they've just loved it ever since. Yeah. So that's going to just be a mainstay. I suspect Bailey and the rest of... Are they actually called Control?
It's the word they've been using a lot, but they've not officially been branded that yet. So we can call them that. People will know.
People will know. Yeah. Anyway, we'll call them Control.
Let him know, in the words of Top Dollar. There you go.
I honestly did not think Top Dollar would ever get referenced on a wrestling podcast ever again. That's how much he's just completely fallen by the wayside.
We watched his WrestleMania weekend match in the office and had a great time for earnest and less earnest reasons.
Yes.
What a hoot. Man, Top Dollar, what a fun, chaotic presence to have around the wrestling industry he was. I hope he makes some kind of, like, high-level comeback.
You know what? I agree.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with that. He was good for the discourse.
Exactly. He was fun. Like, it was just like,
it was
what?
Just chaotic, wasn't it?
What's this guy doing? He's rapped about the Young Bucks and shoes and stuff. It was a good rap as well. It's fun. I love that.
Yeah, no filter. Like, no absolutely no political nous whatsoever, and it's undone him, but you know, he was our Mrs. Presence as
he
well.
He legitimately thought he was like the best promo in the world as well. Yeah, and stuff like that. It's awesome, man. It's awesome. I know you do what's best for business or whatever, but hey, guess what? It's not our business, so
flame out.
Enjoy the ride. Yeah,
absolutely. Just go for it. Flame out.
Imagine if like he went to Impact or something and just like had a fun 5 week run where he pissed everyone off.
Yeah,
like let's go, Frank.
And then the inevitable report of he's been quietly dismissed because he was just an absolute shit disturber.
Yeah, no one liked him. Sorry, poor guy.
Backstage segment sets up the first round of the Women's Tag Team Championship tournament. It's between Io Sky and Dakota Kai against Tamina and Dana Brooke. I'm going to be honest. I've seen far more disastrous Tamina matches. She, in fact, actually interacted with the crowd and got them to pop for her stuff at various points. And again, it's bare minimum, but you know, it is Tamina. This went far too long for me.
Yeah.
Far too long. And again, it's circling back to what I said at the start of the podcast, where I like the players involved. I'm earnestly happy that they are getting spots. I don't necessarily think the stable or the way they're telling the story is great, because they instantly retreated despite having a one-woman advantage at SummerSlam. And now they are giving way too much to Tamina and Dana Brooke in a 10-minute match. This just kind of reeked of something, again, that didn't happen too much on this show of, we've got 3 hours to fill, so let's fill it this way, this week. And I don't think you'd be needing to give 10 minutes to destroy two people who've been stigmatized as absolute 24/7 geeks to the detriment of your new sort of like main event women's division act. But nonetheless, the result is right, at least. Sky and Kai get the match done in 10 minutes. And I don't think it did a lot for them, if I'm being honest.
No, they should have really just bulldozed Tamina and Dana Brooke. I know Tamina's larger, like the powerhouse type style, which might demand an element of protection in other circumstances. But in this case, you know, it's 24/7. She's been in storylines getting married on air recently in joke angles and stuff. And it's not like she's this imposing, credible force. Yeah, no need for it to go so long. I agree. There was some fun stuff, I think, on the offensive front from Sky and Kai. When they got going, they showed that they've been drilling things and working on exchanges that they can do to opponents. It's kind of a similar story with Tamina when she has to control the match a little bit. You know, she's 12 years in, and has there been a demonstrable level of improvement? I don't necessarily think so. The Samoan drop here was particularly clunky,
yep,
is the word we'll go for. I wonder what's going to become of Dana Brooke here. You mentioned her like on the news this morning, and like her work ethic and how that's noticed behind the scenes, and perhaps that'll be rewarded. It's just interesting to think of the 24/7 title, because the division, you know, the antics have not been represented now for 3 Raws in a row. She had the belt tonight and she acknowledged it and said, I'm going to be a double champion. All right, Kenny Omega,
yeah,
on the show. But there was no, you know, no one was chasing her. They even acknowledged it quite cutely, didn't they? Bailey or whatever member of her group was like, I'm not going to pin you for that. Get lost. I wonder what they're going to do with that, because that's been her signature recently over the past few months. USA Network wanting it probably means it's sticking around. Personally, I would have Bailey melt it into a crowbar or something. But yeah, interesting future ahead, I think, for Dana Brooke. At least they did it. You know, this tournament's full of thrown together tandems, particularly on the SmackDown side, where I think every team is like, all right, sure, no worries, because they have to, because the division's not developed. At least they endeavored to go, hey, we're in the same division and we kind of like each other, so we're teaming up. You know, they're geeks, whatever. They're in the 24/7 division, but hey, it's something.
It's something.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Indeed. Something we talked about on the news, which, you know, you can watch on YouTube if you like, if you've not already, in which... who interviewed Kevin Owens? Kevin Patrick!
You were doing a bit.
I'm doing a bit, man. Doing a bit.
Kevin Patrick.
He says, basically, this is Owens basically saying something to the effect of, you know, I'm back, it's Kevin Owens' show. He's basically saying, without saying the words, I'm going to be the Kevin Owens of 2015 again, whatever. And they have the scene in the background, which is not mentioned on commentary, or it's not acknowledged by anyone in the foreground of the scene, which is quite remarkably astute, given the history this company has of just throttling the audience with exposition and in-your-face explanations of what's going on. They are trying to create this conversation online about, oh, have you noticed that in the background? What's this? What's this? And it's a show-long version of a storyline where basically a sedan, I think it was, is found crashed in Dujueb, and Nikki A.S.H. like, what's going on here? It's ridiculous watching Nikki A.S.H. in a cape involved in this real secretive... this is a shoot scene back here, so there's a bit of a distance there that I found amusing. But nonetheless, I'll give them credit for not trampling the back of my skull with information, which is how I would describe how they do virtually everything on this show, and that leads to something a little bit later, which we will get to momentarily. Ray and a trainer check on Dominic, who was unconscious in his best role. They re-air the US title video from last week, which again, bare minimum stuff, but you need to do this. And in fact, like, it's just genuinely really quite astute, and these are simple moves that need to be taken, and in fact are getting taken, so they should have they should get praised for it. So, is this the bit? Yes, it is, right? No, it isn't. It isn't. It isn't. Oh, no, they've had this is where they have the interview, right? Where, I think, anyway, this is the bit where the interview, I'm completely lost at this point. I'm very, very tired. Where Tommaso Ciampa is backstage, and he's talking about his upcoming title match for the US title with Bobby Lashley, and he says, with a straight face, that he dedicates the match to Harley Race. They have the Harley Race gown in the background of the shot, and he's going to wear it and all the rest of it. And he says, with Harley looking down at me below, and The Miz having my back, I'm going to have the belief to win the title. Murray, take it from here, because putting those two names in the same stratosphere is more of an insult to the legacy of Harley Race than it was putting Jim the Anvil Neidhart on a table.
Yes, exactly. What a bewildering choice here, the level of esteem with which whoever penned this segment or came up with the concept holds Harley Race to is clearly not what they think it is. If their comparison point, their direct comparison point, their comparable legend is The Miz, who, you know, with all due respect to him and what he's become, and I think he's, you know, one of the enduring, very, very good, much improved mid-card heel presences of this company over the past few decades. He ain't Harley Race, brothers and sisters. And lots to chew on here. I think it's probably quite safe to say that without Triple H, this probably doesn't happen, because Triple H is a known Harley Race guy as well. He copied everything from the facial hair to the title, to the lengthy title reigns and stuff. Clearly modeled himself after Harley for
a
long time.
Even to the bumping technique is very, very patterned after Harley.
100%. There's a lot of parallels there. So you can see Triple H being all for this. Also, Harley clearly means a lot to Ciampa as well. You can tell that from his promo. Good. Like, Harley was the first US champion as well. It's also almost the 3-year anniversary of his passing. So it's like a very appropriate conceptualization. But for me, this kind of really just hammered home, it's overdue for me that Tommaso Ciampa kicked The Miz to the curb and got on with his business. I think that, you know, you can make the, and I think it's a very WWE brains kind of argument that, oh, he's sharing screen time with this former world champion who's been here for 15 years. And it's like, yes, true. But The Miz is a geek. He's a dork. That's kind of his whole thing. He's a eating heel. He exists to be a cowardly prat and then get his ass kicked. He's not a credible dude. He's not a serious threat. Any advantage he's ever held over anyone, he's gained by cheating or taking a shortcut. He's, you know, that's what he is, and it's a great classic professional wrestling role. But Ciampa buddying around with this guy, he doesn't glean him any kind of creativity, credibility. Sorry, you're not building Ciampa up as that kind of character. So what's going on here?
It's odd, and I agree. It just needs to be brought to a swift conclusion. But ultimately, I'm sort of optimistic about the direction. Around Tommaso Ciampa, because Bobby Lashley versus Tommaso Ciampa was great.
Superb.
What a fantastic, dramatic match this was. There's tons of interference from The Miz. And AJ Styles comes on at some point, doesn't he, as well?
Yeah, twice. That bit where they chased each other out of the ring in the middle of the match was like, okay, guys, cool.
So, it's, yeah, that was a bit redundant. And there's some smoke and mirrors here, but if anything, it just added to the drama. And this match was stunningly loaded with it. I think the idea was, and they told it very, very well indeed, that Tommaso Ciampa was completely outmatched physically by Bobby Lashley, and his attempts to sort of get an advantage were slimy at first, but then with incredible subtlety. Tommaso Ciampa is so good, and you forget how good he is. Like, he sort of like really rules to the occasion, like in the storyline, in the context of the match, particularly with his prolonged selling of the Hurt Lock, and he's just his desperation not to tap out, even though he was like wildly flailing in pain. That was like the most notable example of him kind of wrestling, sort of evolving into a babyface, yeah, or showing more and more babyface characteristics throughout the match. And there was a few like great near falls, there's a few great like sort of submission counters to Lashley's power game as well. Like, at first, I'm watching it thinking they're kind of taking the piss here, because I've been watching Ciampa just be this weird Miz lackey for so long. And it's not the size disparity, because wrestling's fake, guys. And you can tell the story. Like, big guy, little guy is one of the best matches of all time. So it wasn't that. It was more like the aura and the profile disparity. And yet, Ciampa was so good in this match. And that's not saying that Lashley wasn't. They both combined to create something great here, that I really started to believe that he was going to win, mm-hmm, because he wrestled so well. And it was such a mature, balanced, like forward-thinking performance, I found. But yeah, Lashley wins with a Hurt Lock. But this is just a perfect example of how, and I say this every goddamn week, losing cleanly is exponentially better than winning through corny means.
Yeah.
Like, look at Kenny Omega and Wrestle Kingdom 11. Losing is sometimes the absolute best thing that could ever happen to your career.
Yeah, it's proof of the fallacy of the protection argument when it comes to dirty finishes and stuff, isn't it? I think that, you know, wrestling shouldn't always be conclusive, but it should be conclusive a lot more than it has been in WWE over the years, because it's not even just that we're all so tired of the screwy finishes and the distractions, a lot of which do remain on this show at the moment. But the comfortably, the most effective way of quote-unquote protecting someone is for the loss to come at the end of a story. The thing that WWE is often, I think, misguidedly praised for by your kind of Pritchard types on podcasts and various other names that I don't really want to mention, is, oh, they're storytellers. They tell stories, brother, because this person came out and did a distraction. Nah, man, like, a story is a size disparity compensated for perhaps by superior skill, which is kind of what this was. It's that's how you do it, man. You give someone a clear, concrete reason for losing that isn't necessarily a shortcut that's come out of some writer's pen. It's Tommaso Ciampa lost this match because Bobby Lashley, at the end of the day, was the bigger, more domineering guy, but still had to dig really quite deep, which is testament to how close Ciampa was able to push him. He got the Willow's Bell on him and Bobby kicked out because he's just such an unkillable force of a dude. Bobby had to go all the way into the Hurt Lock, which he couldn't get on until the end of the match. It's what happened between you know, those two bells is infinitely more protective than some dopey finish.
Yeah.
You'll remember the quality of this match above, oh, look, WWE, you've done another bad finish. It's just, yeah, really cool to see this on TV. I love this match. I thought it was really great. And really, if you want to rebuild these titles, as they've earnestly doing with the US title, it's been a good couple of weeks I've tweeted about this. Great matches are a really good way of doing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just full of admiration for all of this, and a notable use of the Gargano escape as well.
In Cleveland.
In Cleveland, of all places. But yeah, the crowd was really into this. The crowd was really, really into it. There was a brawl stemming from the mid-match interference between AJ Styles and The Miz, and your main event is announced for later tonight. Piss off. just piss off. Yeah. I have a main event set. Like, it just makes no sense.
Yeah,
and
that's
just
the
makes
thing.
It just makes it so fake, and I will never, ever stop dying on this hill.
It's one of these things, isn't it, that feeds into the, you know, understandable that changes are going to come. We spoke about that earlier. It's going to take a while, blah, blah, blah. You can't, you know, build Rome in a day, whatever cliche you want to use. But not doing impromptu matches is a change you could have made really easily. Straight away, you click your fingers, it goes away. It's not something that needs this length of time to do. A reminder that although Triple H is the one with the final say, Bruce Pritchard and about 40 reality TV writers with no experience in professional wrestling are still the ones who are probably forming the bulk of those creative meetings.
Absolutely, absolutely. Up next, we get a very quick one-on-two handicap match. Moss defeats Two Geeks. And that's it. This to me scanned as we might want to do something with Amos. We might as well. He's been all over the show. He has like sort of a little thing just to tide him over a little bit.
Yeah, not. Oh man, it's hard to go too far into the guy because he's so inexperienced. He came up with just 6 house show matches to his resume, but still for me, beyond like plodding moments and stuff, still for me struggles to impart the kind of impact in his offense and menace demanded by his monster role.
And those are things that simply cannot be learned.
No.
So, yeah. Sorry.
Correct. Yeah.
Anyway, we go backstage. He's not good. We go backstage to Seth Rollins, who does a pretty good impersonation of Riddle. He was asked, apparently Riddle's coming in next week for some kind of challenge or some kind of revelation about his injury status or whatever. And Kevin Patrick asks him, what do you think Riddle's going to have to say? And Seth Rollins, just with a great deadpan, he says, it's Riddle. Like, what does he ever have to say? The guy is thick as anything. He's just going to say stuff like, cool and dude and bro. He's not really going to say anything. And look, he's pretty good, is Riddle in the ring, but he's even better at flushing his potential down the toilet. Just ask Dana White.
Oh.
Got him.
Yeah, the amount of overturned fight outcomes that man had in the UFC. Look up his record, ladies and gentlemen. It's quite interesting. Yeah,
and he invoked Cody Rhodes as a verb as well.
He did. That was fun.
Which is quite fun as
Seth's
well.
Good, man.
The next match was incredibly depressing because it was Dolph Ziggler and Chad Gable in the first 3 minutes, which is mint. Like, yeah. Actually distinctive action. Completely atypical, not just the in-house WWE style, but most anything you'll see in North American TV. Yeah. I love AEW for its range, at its best, for its complete range. I don't think I've seen busted out amateur wrestling chops quite as beautiful as this. Yeah. What a struggle. What like a really unique, captivating micro story they told with just absolutely exemplary amateur leaning offense. And this crowd is dead, and I'm so depressed, and I'm asking existential questions about what WWE can even be. Yeah. If these ingrates in the audience cannot appreciate great wrestling, because if it's not great wrestling, what is it? A DQ factory? Who wants that?
Yeah,
I just don't know what they want if they don't want this. But that just might be my personal bias creeping in because I love Chad Gable, and there's certain moves like a suplex and then a DDT which get a big pop up. Everything else, the beautiful intricacy, like a really distinctive struggle, was just met with absolutely abject silence. And look, as much as I enjoyed this match, right, I don't necessarily want to see Dolph Ziggler get a push, but that is what this indicates is happening.
Yeah, this was a shame, a real shame. That's definitely the word for it, that it wasn't received all that well by the crowd until the kind of the bigger bombs, the more recognizable bombs came out, particularly as like, and I thought the way that they transitioned from Greco-Roman or amateur wrestling, you know, utilizing their own immense backgrounds in that, the way they transitioned into more traditional wrestling was really, really sharp as well. Like Gable just so seamlessly pulling off that German suplex, the rolling German suplex version of Chaos Theory.
Yeah.
Just sensational stuff, man.
So awesome.
But ultimately, for me, this very good six-minute match that I loved highlighted the biggest, one of the biggest challenges awaiting Mr. Triple H in this role, that being the rewiring of brains to accept his vision of the product as what it's going to be and as something that they're going to cheer for and all of that. Because ultimately, that's going to be the thing that defines whether or not he's a success or a flop in this role. Because it's all very well having these matches that are going to appease guys like us and, you know, our Twitter bubbles, because we, like you said in the news this morning, we curate who we follow and usually gravitate towards people of similar tastes. We could go on Twitter this morning and see these reactions and go, that was amazing, blah, 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 blah. But there are like 10,000 people in that arena, perhaps, who were like, eh?
Yeah, what's this?
What's going on? Where's my fireworks? Where's my popcorn, baby? So, you know, for all the talk, and it's a continued battle for, and this isn't some culture war bollocks, I don't want to get involved in that, but for all AEW's, the continued battle of AEW is reconditioning people, not necessarily people who are like of our age group who've watched loads of wrestling and were there for the Monday Night Wars, but and have seen lots of different stuff, but reconditioning people who've seen a 20-year monopoly and accepted WWE style as the absolute norm, and doing away with that theory and returning more to traditional pro wrestling bits and pieces and not leaning on so many shortcuts. Triple H now has to do the exact same thing with that exact audience, and it's an unenviable task. I think This ruled, like, break from the house style. Hell yeah, these guys are great amateur wrestlers. Chad was at the Olympics. Dolph has his own pedigree. Makes so much sense for them to go out and do this. And I really got a lot out of it. But, hey, I'm one guy. There's however many viewers there. Will it catch on? I don't know. I hope it does, because I enjoy this a lot more than just have some six-minute house style standard Raw match or whatever. Yeah, really highlights one of the biggest hurdles that Triple H has to leap.
This could be a big challenge, because if you evaluate the success of that strategy, which, as you said, is retrain the audience into accepting another style of pro wrestling, I would describe it, given the broken brains on Twitter, as an absolute colossal failure through absolutely no fault of AEW's trying, because at the peak of that promotion, just look at CM Punk and MJF.
Yeah.
And how absolutely incredible it was. It's just one example. Yes, they brought back long-term storytelling like they said they would, and you got so many babies going, I don't understand, why has he got a different entrance theme?
Yeah.
Even though it was actually explained by Excalibur, like, people just do not want to learn. People are, they would rather outwardly look like idiots and admit to being thick to own AEW for doing a somewhat niche thing.
Yeah.
People are prepared to look actually stupid than to accept something new. And yet, unenviable, Murray, as you point out, is the word. There's a backstage interview with Nikki and Dujab where they talk about something, but it's not the point. The point is you're meant to look at the car in the background and some investigators sort of rushing past it, and there's been a crash and what's going on. And then we get to the main event. It's AJ Styles versus The Miz. I would describe this as a reasonably fun plunder brawl. I don't like the fact that it was impromptu. Maybe I'm being generous, because at least it's not Miz in a singles match. And as much as it wasn't impromptu, it didn't feel excessive for excess sake, like a ladder match leading to War Games, which is a particular bugbear of mine during the first Wednesday Night War, because Styles and The Miz have been feuding for quite some time. It's fine. It's, you know, if you get some kendo sticks, it elevates about three quarters of a star onto Miz's work. Styles wins. Think that's going to bring that feud to a conclusion. And we get sort of a cliffhanger, because as AJ Styles celebrate, Dexter Lumis is seen. It's not meant to be him. It's meant to be some kind of disrupting fan in like a hooded jacket. But it eventually becomes obvious that it's Dexter Lumis, right? I'm going to bury the hell out of this. I'm going to say one nice thing, then I'm going to bury it, right? I don't know why Dexter Lumis is there. It is good that they're asking the question. If you connect the events of the crashed car, the urgency with which Loomis was entering the ring. Does he have a message, or like, you know what I mean? Like, what does he want to say? What kind of? It's not for me. I just don't like it. I just like Jim Crocker Promotions. But if you're going to do this kind of show long sports entertainment angle involving a serial killer, the fact that he's crashed the car means he's desperate to be here for some reason or other. That's meant to make you think, well, what's Dexter Loomis got to say, or what does he want to do? And that will be the cliffhanger leading to next week's show, right? This goddamn company. Right, first of all, Dexter Loomis, in my opinion, is not very good.
Sure.
He coincides, much like Karrion Kross, with the downfall of NXT, and the fact that Triple H is insisting, it would appear, on making Karrion Kross happen after he resolutely failed to happen is really not unlike Vince McMahon with his pet projects and just defiantly pushing people who fans are not prepared to see in those roles. It's just a different guy doing the same thing that Vince did. I'm sorry, that's as Vince McMahon as it gets, regardless. My other big problem with this, right, is that this company cannot keep a camera concentrated on a single scene, object, move, strike, whatever, for more than 3 seconds. We don't mention enough how intolerable this is as a viewing experience, because again, we are so, it's so normal to us now, right? You can watch a punch get thrown. It takes less than a second, and somehow Dunn will conspire to shoot it from three different angles, right? There are so many cuts. The one time you wanted to make it look like there's someone at ringside who shouldn't be there, right? And it's like a tracking shot from Paul Thomas goddamn Anderson of this person who's not meant to be there getting filmed. I was like, are you joking me?
Yeah.
Have a little bit of elegance about what you're trying to tell with a story. Guy who, for all intents and purposes, you've not seen him yet because you haven't booked this because it's not fake. A fan's entering the ring. Cut away, cut away.
Mm-hmm.
The mere set, like, obviously you have to work it to a degree, but as soon as you say, oh, he shouldn't be there, right? Cut away. Pan to the crowd. Just be more elegant with it, because this was poorly done, in my opinion.
Yeah, Kevin Dunn got to go. It's kind of one of the final pillars of this old boys club. That's, you know, for me, he's a detriment to the product. I don't think that WWE can truly feel distinct or new or fresh until his signature style of production has gone the way of the dodo. Yeah, Dexter Loomis, right? Interesting situation to analyze. Subjectively, I'm not really a big Dexter Loomis guy. I thought he was quite amusing in the way, the wedding and all that. Well, it was fun, whatever. But as a serious threat, I probably have some personal biases that I need to overcome before I can really get invested in this. But that's fine, because acknowledging them, I think, is just as valuable as being earnestly fired up and into it. Maybe more so, in fact, because you can stay detached and keep it at arm's length. But so I agree pretty much with everything you've said. I do appreciate, like we touched on earlier with the crash, the car accident thing. I do appreciate that a show that desperately needed other forms of storytelling is actually getting a different form of storytelling here, with the not really acknowledging him. And Corey Graves said, what the hell, or something along those lines, and not really going. Because 2 weeks ago, this would have been, it's Dexter Loomis, what's he doing here, and why did he crash his car? And the salty hammer did drop a little bit, because after the show, WWE uploaded a YouTube video saying Dexter Loomis crashes Raw. And it's like, oh, you can't help yourself. You can't help yourself. So, you know, there's an element of it. But yeah, no, I do appreciate the whole leaving at least a little bit to the viewer's imagination, kind of keeping it ambiguous. It's another thing that maybe requires a bit of rewiring for fans who maybe watched this and just went, no one told me what this means. How am I supposed to, there's no storytelling here. Don't know why I did that voice for whatever, but yeah, like I do earnestly appreciate the effort. I like that they did something that's atypical of what this show has been for like 20 odd years. And I am willing to give it a chance. There we go.
Are you saying, Murray, in the perfect closing note to this podcast, that you are willing to let Dexter Loomis on Raw play out?
Trust the process, Michael.
Jesus Christ. I've been on holiday for 2 weeks and everything bloody changed. Right, are you going to let it play out, guys? In the comments section underneath the Twitter link to this podcast, let us know, is this enthusiasm patronizing? Is it earned? We just want to know your opinions on the show. You can do so underneath the Twitter link to this podcast at WhatCultureWWE. Whilst you're there, you can follow Andy Murray at...
At Andy H. Murray. The H stands for H. Three of them.
H, comma, Papa.
Oh, wow.
Papa H makes me sick, by the way. I find it nauseating.
Who do you prefer? Who's the best Papa? Papa H, Papa Shango, or Papa John? Oh, he's a bad guy, isn't he, Papa John?
Shango.
There we go. Charles Wright, shout out to the god.
Absolutely.
Big fan.
And if you stick around on your podcast feeds later on today, you will find the NXT 2.0 preview. I don't know anything that happened on that goddamn show, so that's going to be a hoot, I suspect. Back tomorrow with the usual schedule of things. And until then, we will see you soon. Thanks for joining us.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.